COVID, manageable system for equitable land ownership is necessary for development. Without it, the poor will remain in poverty and corruption will continue to thrive. That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, March 26th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to you, Shaka.
Hello to you, Mariama.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the significance of land reform in Africa as representatives from governments and civil society converge here in Washington for the annual World Bank Conference on Land and Poverty.
And looking definitely forward to hearing what our guests have to say on such an important topic that got a lot of comments from our audience through our social media platforms. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
But first, outdated land registration systems have been holding back the economic development of most African countries. A case in point is Uganda, where only 20% of the country's land is legally registered. Observers say, as a result, land disputes are on the rise. My colleague Paul Ndiho went on a fact-finding mission and filed this report.
I had heard the buzz about a pilot computerized land reform management system being put into place in my country, Uganda. The older land registration system has been a drag on development. The country's population has grown exponentially in the last decade, and that's putting enormous pressures on the land. Amadra Ori Okida is an independent consultant hired by the government to help introduce a modernized system.
All the documents related to land registration were actually in the very poor situation. The filing, the organizations, you could see heaps and heaps and heaps of documents.
The government is implementing a state-of-the-art system designed and implemented by Thomson Reuters and its partners. I'm here in the capital, Kampala, to ask the experts and senior government officials to explain the new land information system and its benefits to the public.
The goal is to bring services closer to the people and increase accountability.
The old manual system dates back to the colonial era, as you can see here at the National Land Records Office in Entebbe.
If you want to work for Eastern region, you come in this, so that you know where to go. It's like when you're in a computer, you keep your things in folders. So this is our folder in terms of the computer systems.
The Ugandan government is betting that this new computerized system will end its land disarray and corruption in its land registry.
Could not track who had what title, what had been issued, let alone the problem of multiple titles where a number of titles were issued on the same piece of lands.
Under the old manual system, it took days or weeks for the public to get the documents that they wanted. The public deeply disliked having to pay bribes to get the job done.
What was happening before? You presented in a district, your documents then went to Entebbe, Entebbe to Kampala, Kampala back to the district. They tell you, oh, go back again, and all kinds of, and sometimes you're not able to complete this. Some many people would give up.
The new system, there are no more deteriorating paper deeds. Within 8 months of startup, the ministry staff digitized more than 500,000 of these old paper titles. They also scan torn and tattered maps. According to the Minister of Lands, Housing and Urban Development, Daudi Mijereko.
When you look at the way the information is presently stored, when you consider the amount of time it takes to retrieve information, I think we have made a major breakthrough because we were dealing with volumes and volumes of paper.
The commissioner in charge of lands, Sala Kulata Basangwa, believes the investment will greatly reduce land disputes and promote economic growth.
Everyone will have confidence in the document of ownership. Then people will invest more, banks will accept this document more and more. They will do less due diligence than they have been doing before lending.
The new system has eliminated the backlog of unprocessed land registrations. Remember Uganda's rapid population that I mentioned earlier, and how it challenged the economic future of the country. Well, the new land information system is laying the foundation for addressing those challenges. I'm optimistic that this reform will lead to growth for Uganda.
I'm Paul Ndiho at the Ministry of Lands, Housing and Urban Development in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Daudi Migereko, the Ugandan Minister of Lands, Housing and Urban Development, and Dr. Joan Kyuka Kagwanja, Chief of the Land Policy Initiative, a Regional Integration and Trade Division of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, based in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Well, I have to say we're sister and brother, since we all come from East Africa, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa, at least for the first time.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome.
Nice to be here.
Well, thank you very much, Shaka. We are more than delighted to be with you here in the studio.
The feeling is mutual.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Well, once again, of course, it's really a great pleasure to see you coming all the way from East Africa. I gather that you actually went to school somewhere in Missouri?
I went to school in Kentucky first, actually. Uh-huh. And then I went to school in Missouri to do my PhD.
Went to the Show Me the Money State.
I went to the Show Me State, the home of the Tigers.
Very interesting, very interesting. Yes. And of course, Daudi, yes, you and I, frankly, went to the same university system in California.
Yes, I was at the University of California, Santa Barbara, for my graduate studies. Prior to that, I had been to Makerere University. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I transferred to University College London in London.
Very, very nice. Yeah. Of course, as I told you a little bit earlier, I went to UCLA.
That's true. That's true. It's some system, really.
That is correct. That is correct. Mm-hmm. Now, talking about land, you come from countries, frankly, or a continent, where the majority of people, frankly, still make their living and their living from land, correct?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, when you look at the continent, we are talking about the majority of people depending on land-based sectors like agriculture or drawing it from forestry. About 70% of Africans actually draw their livelihoods from agriculture. And when you're looking at women in particular who are actually depending on agriculture mostly, you look at the matters that relate to land and the fact that they don't control land and the governance of land and the fact that you expect them then to be productive in that sector. And those are issues we should look at.
You could, of course, also add the fact that women do, not only do they, in fact, perhaps are they the single most important producers, really, when it comes to land. They produce the produce, the products and stuff like that, but they do not have control over it, correct?
Absolutely. And because, you know, our customary systems, which, although we have statutory laws that mostly allow women to actually own property, our customary systems, because of the way that they were and the lack of empowerment of women, they still are not there yet in terms of women's control over land, secure access to land. And sometimes in extreme cases, you find that women are even dispossessed of land when they lose their spouses.
Is that what is happening, or is that the situation, Daudi, as far as Uganda is concerned?
Well, yes, it is true. About 70% of our people live off land for their livelihood. But it is also true that there are problems with customs, there are problems with tradition, and also the fact that to many of our societies, land is not considered as an economic item, but rather as a traditional and cultural item. So when we are looking at land from the point of view of production, we need to have that at the back of our minds. So much so that if we are going to introduce interventions, we need to address the perception, the mindset of our people, such that we reorient the perception and mindset in order to ensure that there is greater production and productivity on the land. And I can tell you the debate can be as long as you'd want it to be if we are going to really take advantage of land as a factor of production.
Well, unfortunately, time is not our best ally. We only have an hour, at least for this particular edition, but of course, come again next time. Let's talk about the differences between statutory laws and customary laws, and as far as land is concerned. What is that? What's the difference?
Well, I can say that traditionally, a clan or a community owned land, and the clan leader had absolute rights over this land. Alternatively, the community had to sit and determine who should be given what part of the land that the clan or community owned. Oftentimes, this land would be allocated to the head of the household.
Yes.
In which case, ladies or women who were never traditionally considered, I don't know whether today they are, traditionally not considered to be heads of the household,
right,
would never have access to land as the owners of that land.
Have no inheritance rights.
They would have no inheritance rights. But we now observe that through constitutional arrangements, at least with the constitution of Uganda, men and women have equal access to land and land rights. We also have the Land Act. It also gives access to land to the women. And in as far as the modern legal system is concerned, we have solved that problem. But it takes time before a society can graduate from non-traditional arrangements to modern arrangements which pursue the provisions of the constitution, the provisions of the legal system. So I think that's where we are right now, and those are some of the problems that we are currently trying to deal with. So much so that when you try to look at the registered land in the country, you find that the percentage of land that is registered directly in the names of women may not go beyond 30%, despite the fact that the biggest percentage of people that we have in the country, you find that women are in the majority.
Yes.
But when it comes to owning land, at least registered land,
they are in the minority.
They are in the minority.
Why is that so?
I've told you it's tradition. It's the customs, and so on and so forth.
Can't it be changed politically?
Well, it will have to, at the political level, the NRM government, as you know, has made a major pronouncement. There's affirmative action for the women in regard to so many things. But I think the real transformation that we shall be in a position to see that will bring about the desired changes is through education and the empowerment of women through education and the job market. Because once you give women access to education, opportunity to access education, the benefits of exposure, there are benefits of knowledge, there are benefits of understanding their own rights, their own responsibilities in society, and that goes a long way to solve the problem. But even more importantly, once they get into the job market, get jobs and have income, then they can take a decision to go on the market and acquire land on their own. And that is what we are really working on at the moment.
We'll continue with the discussion. But before we pause for a short break, we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website, Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Let's take a quick look at land reform in Zimbabwe. In 1979, the signing of the Lancaster House Agreement under the quote, willing buyer, willing seller, unquote plan, marked the beginning of Zimbabwe's modern move to distribute land more equitably between the historically disenfranchised blacks and the minority whites who had ruled the country. In 2000, President Robert Mugabe fast-tracked the land reform program to alter the ethnic balance of land ownership.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Sister Joanne. How does it feel like you are a woman? You have had unfettered access to education. Do you have that kind of problem?
Well, Shaka, we do have the problem. But for those who are a little bit more educated and economically empowered, you can buy land. So buying land becomes a little bit easier.
Right.
But the majority of people, you know how land is. It's not cheap. So the majority that rely on inheritance, for instance, that's a crux of the problem. Because most, even when the laws change, most fathers are not, you know, they don't perceive that women should be inheriting land. Because the attitude has not changed, especially in patrilineal societies where women get married and go to their husband's houses, their husband's home.
Right.
And so the perception is, will you take the land with you? So they want to make sure that the land stays in families. And to do that, then you allocate land to the men or to the boys. But even in matrilineal societies, we are having more and more, it's becoming a challenge as well. Because the control of the land, although it's supposed to reside with the women, it's actually with the uncles. You see, so and when it comes to titling, then the power play starts again. So even in situations where traditionally women are secure, they are becoming increasingly insecure because of pressures coming on the land.
Talk to us about a situation, for example, say like in Kenya, your country. You are married. Unfortunately, your husband passes away. You have children. Don't you have unfettered access to inheriting that land since it belonged to the family?
Well, it really depends. In Kenya, if the land was titled, most of the time it's titled to a man.
Really?
Yes. So if I want that land now transferred to me as a wife, it requires that there's a process through which that land is transferred. And through that, there's gazettement, as you know. And it depends now on the situation if the brothers of the husband decide that they are also entitled to this land, they can actually create a lot of problems. We are seeing situations where problems are created before you even bury your husband so that the inheritance question can be settled before somebody is buried. This is what is happening. And because I work on an initiative, which is an African Union initiative, examining the land question in Africa, it's just not one country. It's across the countries. And it's luckily, you know, African governments have said, yes, we want to address these issues. We have a declaration on land that we have said now we want to address the issue, especially the issue of women's land rights. So we are trying to provide some guidance on how we can address this through laws, but also through empowerment of women, empowerment of our men, so that we all understand the situation and the role of women, especially in economic development.
In a situation like that, who should adjudicate land ownership disputes?
Well, it really depends on the system, and I'm sure the minister can attest to that. We have local systems of adjudicate of in terms of dispute, but traditionally in those particular systems, There is then the issue of duality where, yes, there was a traditional system that has now, because of colonial system and colonial laws, mm-hmm. we now have a statutory system, so you have the court system. So it's not very clear, really, depending on the traditions, on the custom mm-hmm. in the area. Mm-hmm. So that is what we are trying to clarify with newer land laws like Uganda and Kenya and Southern Sudan and many other countries where there's some element of gray area in terms of law and in terms of custom. Mm-hmm. So that customary dispute resolutions can have value, but they need to be recognized in law as well. And because the courts are not very accessible, especially to the majority of the people.
But I think what we have done through our national land policy, which was recently, which was approved by our cabinet, mm-hmm. is that in situations where the customary system cannot deliver on the desired solution, mm-hmm. such that the widow and the family can clearly inherit what has been left to them by the deceased husband or the deceased parent of the children, mm-hmm. then the modern legal system comes in to play to their advantage. Because we realize that through the traditional system, the clan tends to take the upper part.
Yes.
The clan, the cultural system, and so on. Mm-hmm. So we said, yes, we know that you can be in a position to call a clan meeting mm-hmm. and address this matter. Mm-hmm. But because under the traditional system, preference is always given to men, mm-hmm. we need to create a window for one seeking recourse to the modern legal arrangements. And I think that way we may be in a position mm-hmm. to solve some of these problems.
Mm-hmm. Wherever you have learned, Daudi, you have these issues of corruption,
yes,
unethical behavior, and all that kind of stuff. How do you address those types of things, especially in your particular case in Uganda?
Of course, corruption and unethical behavior thrives most where information is limited. Mm-hmm. If the society, the community you are dealing with does not readily have access to information, is not aware of its rights and responsibilities, then corruption can easily thrive. What we have been laying emphasis on is sensitization, mm-hmm. creating awareness regarding the land rights of the various communities, of the people, and then trying to make sure that we also move from the archaic system, which was introduced in 1900 by the colonial masters. Mm. We are now trying to introduce a new system whereby we can get all the land records computerized, such that anybody who wants to undertake any land transaction, this is handled through the computerized system. The information is stored under the computerized system and is retrieved through the computerized system, such that wherever you are, you don't have to be in the capital in Kampala mm-hmm. to be in a position to gain access to the information that is on your file. Mm-hmm. It's a question of saying, yes, I've come to the land office. I would like to check out on my land, which is on such and such physical address, and then you can be in a position to get whatever transactions have taken place on that land without saying, let me go to the capital. Mm-hmm. Now, the advantage of that is that the ease with which people would be told lies, people would be taken advantage of, has now been reduced. And I think when the computerized system, which we have now introduced, gets to be known and accepted by our people, the problems of corruption that we have been seeing associated with handling land transactions under the manual system will clearly be minimized. It is difficult to say that they will be totally eliminated, mm-hmm. but I can see these are going to be gradually eliminated and ultimately will be stamped out.
You have done a lot of decentralization in as far as Uganda is concerned.
Yes.
And you're talking, of course, how you are trying to make it easy for people to access, you know, land offices and get their titles and stuff like that.
The services.
E-services. What about a report that says that you have only about 6 centers in the country?
Yes.
That, for example, a kid from Kabari like me, if I need to have access to a land title,
yes,
I may in fact have to go to Kampala. Is
no,
that true?
No, you go to Mbarara.
I go to Mbarara.
You go to Mbarara.
But even Mbarara is not near. If I'm an ordinary peasant farmer, for example.
But we had to start from somewhere. We could not cover the entire country at a go.
Uh-huh.
So we said, yes, in the initial stages, let's have 7 zonal offices.
Mm-hmm.
Mbarara, Masaka, Wakiso, Mukono, mm-hmm. Jinja, mm-hmm. Kampala. So we said, let's make a start with this. And this would also allow us to study the entire system and the way it works, identify the gaps, sort out these gaps such that when we decide to roll out the computerized system all over the country,
mm-hmm.
We shall be having a system which is very perfect that can serve the people and meet their expectations. And please, I want to appeal to the Ugandans, kindly bear with us. We had to start with 7 offices and within no time, because mm-hmm. we have now secured funding
mm-hmm.
to enable us to roll out to 21 zonal offices in the country. And within no time, we should be covering the whole country.
Now, you have so far accomplished 20%, correct?
We have got 20% of the entire country
mm-hmm.
that has registered land, which we have captured within our system, titled land.
As titled land?
Yeah.
What about the issue of fake titles?
Well,
fake land titles.
We have been having a problem of people who have turned it into their business to manufacture their own titles
mm-hmm.
and therefore produce fake titles. Now, with
are
the,
those
the
people
new,
inside your ministry or outside your ministry or both?
I think given that it has been a trade, it would involve quite a number of people.
It's a trade?
It has been a trade.
Almost like a stock exchange of
sorts. It has been a trade. Some people have been surviving on this for quite some time. But now with the computerized system, we have introduced new titles with security features that cannot be easily manufactured by that trade that we are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in as long as we maintain the security features that we have introduced on these new titles, we shall be in a position to stamp out the fake titles.
You know, of course, a lady called Edith Nantaba, don't you?
Yeah, Ida.
Ida Nantaba.
Yes.
You know, she's been talking about these issues of
unethical
behavior.
That's true.
In fact, talking about registrars
that's true.
Within your ministry.
That's why I said it has been a collusion involving quite a number of people. Some in our ministry, some on the trade, some land dealers, and the printeries on Nasa Road and Nkrumah Road.
Very interesting. Yes. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is a look at our letter of the week from a Facebook fan in Tanzania.
Daniel Manupa from Singida in Tanzania writes, land reform can contribute to economic growth because it involves the transfer of ownership from the more powerful to the less powerful. Such transfers of ownership may be with little or no compensation to the full value of the land. That way, land reform can enhance economic growth and alleviate poverty in Africa.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Callers collects and will pay for the call, or call directs and will call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Maliama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. In Uganda, the Ministry of Lands, Housing and Urban Development is responsible for all matters concerning land development. The ministry is also tasked with creating policies and initiating laws responsible for sustainable land management and fostering orderly urban development in the country. This is probably very similar to other African nations and may slightly vary from country to country. And this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, how do you think land reform can contribute to economic growth and poverty reduction on the African continent? Well, let's begin right away with a comment from Robert Olabanjo in Uyo in Nigeria, who writes, land reform in Africa will contribute to economic growth and poverty reduction. African land tenure, robust credit institutions, and improved rural infrastructure will promote agricultural development and productivity, consequently boosting economic growth. Well, another comment comes from Filippo Mwanyange in Mbeya in Tanzania, who says, governments should first empower local farmers before seeking external investors for land reform. That's not what's happening now. External investors should be a last option only. Well, Shaka, very interesting and very well-informed comments here. Your take on this.
Indeed. What about you weighing in, Joanne?
Well, I think those were very good comments. First, I think land is very central to Africa's transformation, mm-hmm. In terms of economic transformation. We just mentioned that most of Africans derive their livelihoods from land.
Right.
So I think if you want to start to transform African people's lives, that's where you start. But on the other hand, and we do have a lot of land, mm-hmm. you know, data mm-hmm. shows us that about 60% of the land which is currently available for agriculture to turn into production right now actually is in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we do have these what we call the land grab that was being referred to by one of our viewers. And it shows, yes, especially post-2008 when we had the food security and energy crisis, a lot of investors did come to the continent. So it's not the first time this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
They have been coming since colonialism.
Correct.
But I think at this time we saw a shoot in demand for agricultural land. And the viewer is very right that we need to balance the amount of land we are giving to foreigners and also allow for our own domestic investors to invest, because we do have the land to invest.
Foreign investors, for example, investing in flowers.
Yeah.
You know, for, of course, markets in Europe and North America and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you draw a balance, really?
Mm-hmm.
Should we have these commercial farms which generate, you know, foreign exchange and what have you? Or should we, first and foremost, frankly, look at the issue of feeding our people first?
Well, Shaka, I don't think it's that simple. I think that we have a range of systems, and I think we can accommodate a range of systems. It's not either or.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you that food is really important for Africa, obviously. And we shouldn't necessarily invest in non-food items, but like I'm telling you, we do have land to invest.
Right.
So I think sometimes we get stuck in the discussion of small farmer, large farmer.
Mm-hmm.
I think the system allows for a multiplicity of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at inclusive models where we can have the large-scale production and the smallholder farmers without disadvantaging the smallholder farmers and small business.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about transforming agriculture, about agribusiness. We do need investments. That's a bottom line. But the African Union has developed guiding principles on how we can govern our large-scale land-based investments in the context of the Land Policy Initiative. So the UNECA and the AFDB and AUC have said, look, we do recognize the importance of investments, but here are some guidelines that can assist us to get inclusive models of investments.
Mariama, please share some more of the audience reaction.
Well, we'll move on to another posting from Asaba Allen in Kampala, Uganda, who writes, absolutely not. Land reform will not contribute to economic growth Well, due to skyrocketing corruption. I think Shaka alluded to that earlier. But let's look at another comment. William Dorcas from Ikoro in Nigeria, who writes, land reform will contribute to Africa's economic development only if our governments empower our rural farmers into practicing commercial farming. This will help to eradicate poverty. Once again, commercial farming that Shaka alluded to earlier. And the comment, some about fighting corruption, also empowering rural farmers so they can get their business to another level, and thinking about that maybe commercial farming can participate in alleviating the burden of poverty. Shaka?
It's all yours, Daoud.
Well, I think the point we need to make here is that, yes, we have 70% of our people living off the land in the rural areas.
Right.
But they have been, by and large, practicing peasant agriculture and using peasant methods of production, mm-hmm. Such that their level of production, their level of productivity, despite the fact that they may have vast amounts of land in the countryside, mm-hmm. Just does not create the desired impact, just doesn't produce enough food mm-hmm. For themselves to feed on and the surplus to put on the market. So maybe the interventions we need is to make sure that we deliberately address the methods of production mm-hmm. such that we can be in a position to let our people graduate from peasant agricultural production mm-hmm. to commercial agricultural production mm-hmm. And be in a position to propel them into a modern economy mm-hmm. such that we can be in a position to produce enough agricultural crops in the countryside mm-hmm. and provide the necessary raw materials for industrialization within the rural areas. Mm-hmm. This industrialization, which is really going to help add value to the agricultural products that are being produced in the rural areas, mm-hmm. will guarantee good returns to the farmers who are in the countryside and therefore encourage them to produce more. Mm-hmm. However, if our people get stuck to the methods of production, to the peasant production that they are currently pursuing, we have a problem.
You have a problem.
So the land reforms we are introducing must also be coupled with interventions that address the need mm-hmm. to let our people graduate from peasant production mm-hmm. to commercial production mm-hmm. and introduction of value addition within the rural areas. Once we do that, then that will make sense. But we must also accept one thing. If our ordinary farmers are going to be let continue operating from the countryside on their own, mm-hmm. then it will take us a lot longer to transform them from what they are used to what is acceptable. Mm-hmm. And because of that, our governments, at least government in Uganda, has been encouraging the introduction of nucleus farms, large-scale estates in the rural countryside, mm-hmm. such that the ordinary farmer in the countryside will be in a position to see what is happening on a modern commercial farm mm. in the countryside and try to adopt the methods of production, try to acquire technology from those farms mm-hmm. and transfer the same to his own farm. You know, seeing is believing. Once these farmers see something being handled, pursued in the right manner, on a modern commercial farm,
he can replicate it
very easily.
I see.
Very easily. And this is what we need to see happening in the countryside. And that way, we shall be in a position to realize the desired transformation that we have been pursuing over the years in the past.
Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, I have to mention before I go that I've been a minority today in the studio. It's East Africa versus West Africa, but it's all good. It's all Africa, and we'll leave it to that. But thanks to you and to our guests and all our viewers and listeners on the radio, TV, or web, just a reminder, we love hearing from you, so please keep your comments coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can just join our YouTube channel. Subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, Rwanda and the international community are poised to commemorate the genocide that took place 20 years ago. Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who took office in 2000, has been praised by some of his attempts at reconciliation and criticized by others for his human rights record. What fundamental lessons have been learned from this tragedy? Well, that's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Mariama. I have, of course, to remind you that for the last several weeks, Aishaka, the kid from Kabale, have actually been a minority because, as you know, of course, we've been hosting female, beautiful ladies on Straight Talk Africa. Look after you. Let me go to the lifeline of the show, which the telephone callers. There's this gentleman called Ooko from Kenya. Good evening, Ooko. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, how are you? This is Joseph Ooko from Busia, Kenya.
You seem to have a down payment on the line, Joseph. How do you access Straight Talk Africa every week?
Yeah, because I like it very much. We talk about Africa, and I love my Africa. I want Africa to go up. That's why I use the unity and every Wednesday I have to be in my kids.
So what's your question?
I want to talk about this reducing poverty through land reform. It's a very important thing because everything we need comes from land. And the big problem we have in Africa is that the Minister of Land is leading in corruption. That's the very big problem. You know what will take to reduce that corruption? And the second one is that our young generation, after getting their education, they run to the urban areas, leaving this rural area without doing farming. How will you get this farm? How will you get food? So they have to come back home and do things. They do that farming, what they have get in their education, so that you can move on getting things very well. Thank you very much. I'm very happy to get you right here in Kenya, Busia.
You're most welcome. Of course, both of you must be aware of the contributions of Peruvian economist Hernando de Soto, Informal Economy. He talks about how governments should figure out a way of reaching out to ordinary poor farmers so that you can empower them. They may not necessarily have to be really commercial farmers, but at least put them in a situation where you can add value to their land so that they can have unfettered access to credit facilities if they need it.
Mm-hmm. Of course, when we pursue land demarcation and titling in rural areas, then we are introducing this rural land into the modern economy. Mm-hmm. And the value of that land, once one has acquired the title, automatically goes up. And also, you have facilitated the ordinary rural farmer with the means with which to get into the financial, find a way into the financial institutions and be in a position to acquire credit, which credit can be used to acquire implements, acquire technology, acquire better seed for purposes of increasing his or her production. So the land reforms we are pursuing, which also involve acquiring or giving out titles to people in the countryside over their land, is one credible way that will ensure that our people are introduced into the modern economy and have access to better services than they have been having.
We'll come to that later. Time is not our best ally. There's no democracy in Studio 52. I'm told to go, I have to go. We'll be back. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. Today, we are talking about the significance of land reform in Africa as representatives from governments and civil society converge here in Washington for the annual World Bank Conference on Land and Poverty. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Let's take another look at land reform in South Africa. South Africa's land reform policies started in the 1990s during the presidency of Nelson Mandela with the stated goal of changing the inequalities of the apartheid-era law when black people were not permitted to own land. Since the 1990s, multiple proposals for land reform and redistribution within the farming community have sadly failed. Current President Jacob Zuma has said that promises of sweeping land reform measures made to black people after the end of apartheid has not yet worked out as planned.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back. If you have just joined us, we are talking about the significance of land reform in Africa as representatives from governments and civil society converge here in Washington for the annual World Bank Conference on Land and Poverty. Our distinguished guests are Daudi Migereko, the Ugandan Minister of Lands, Housing and Urban Development, and Dr. Joan Chuka Kagwanja, Chief of the Land Policy Initiative, the Regional Integration and Trade Division of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, based in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Well, I have to say, sister and brother, once again, profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Mm. I gather that I have to go to someone in Liberia. Good evening, Mohammed, from Liberia. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, good evening, Shaka. And this is again Mohammed. And I'm calling from Monrovia, Liberia.
You're very terrific. How are you? What is your question, please? Be brief.
Yes, my question or comment here, land reform, I think, is very vital to the development and reduction of poverty in Africa. And I think, yeah, in Liberia, the government of Liberia has taken some measure that is, we have now the land commission. But one thing we have to look at is to reduce or to try to shrink in terms of gender equity when it comes to land ownership. Because we have some religious and we have additional laws that forbid women from taking ownership of land. So as a result, we have people in some of our counties here where we have violence as a result of land issues. So all I want to say that we must try to strengthen and encourage gender participation or gender ownership. That is, women must also have right to own land. That will also encourage the reduction of poverty in our country. So that's my only comment and contribution I have to the program.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to apologize to you, Daoud, for having interjected when you still wanted to talk.
Yes,
I have to say, frankly, that there's no democracy here. If the producer tells you to go for a break, you have to go. And therefore, I'd like you to find some space in your beautiful Busoga hat to forgive me for that.
No. I mean, this is acceptable. There must always be rules for any one game.
You're most welcome.
But if you...
Could you pick up from where you left and perhaps respond to Mohammed?
I just wanted to say one thing. As a government, in Uganda, we have a duty to make sure that the number of people who are living off the land continues reducing. Because when you look at modern economies, the percentages of people who live off agriculture is every other day reducing.
Right.
Most of the people are engaged in industries and the services sector. And we believe that is the route we have to take.
And the young people do not really find, you know, staying on land romantic.
They no longer.
If you will.
And as Minister of Land, Housing and Urban Development, one of my assignments is to anticipate the movement of people from rural areas to the urban areas. Because it is something that we can no longer try to convince the young people about, that they should remain in the rural areas when we know that actually transformation entails, amongst other things, to leave the rural areas and move to urban areas where services are easily provided. So really, our thinking, our perception of the attitude of the young people in regard to not wanting or not having a love for the rural areas is something we need to handle fairly cautiously, because modern times do require that people move to the urban areas and leave the rural areas for production purposes in as far as agriculture is concerned.
Now, Joanne, you know as well as I do that in Ethiopia and Tanzania and a few other African countries, land is so important that it is not left to individuals. It belongs to the state, the people through the state, because land becomes a sort of social economic safety net. And yet, in your country, for example, and Uganda, land belongs to individuals, correct?
To the people.
Yeah. Which is to the people, but you have to buy it and own it. It's as if it is leased, really, as opposed to being owned. Which is better? Which is the better way to go? What are some of the advantages there where the land belongs to the state and where land belongs to individuals?
Okay. Shaka, the declaration on land and through the framework and guidelines, I think African governments and states, they decided that the conversation about how they govern the land is really left to a country. So countries can have a conversation and ideally should have a conversation with their people about how they govern their land, what kind of system they're going to have. But whether the land is vested in a president, land is vested in the people, we have customary systems. I think it's about recognizing that this land is held in trust for the people. So not getting bogged down in the fact that some states own land or don't own land. Responding, for instance, to Mohammed from Liberia, they have a new land policy in Liberia, which has recognized the value of securing land rights for women. And what remains now, yes, they have the commissions, is really in terms of the governance systems to allow for that to happen. So we move from, yes, the policy discussion, and go down to actually how you manage these lands. Yes, titling, but also titling can be expensive. So getting that title, sometimes it can take 3 years for you to get a title, you know that. So it's about looking for tools that can allow us to secure land rights. And we have examples in Ethiopia. They have land certificates where you can secure, it's not ownership, but it is use rights of land. We have several countries experimenting with certification where instead of costing $300 for you to do that, it can cost you $5. So I think it's experimenting with different systems. And then also understanding that even when that title is available, it's not a panacea. So you can have a title and still not have access to credit, because the title itself and going to credit is another system. So it's not just the land ministry dealing with this. It's contextualizing it within the whole development within the country, the planning system, the financial markets, how you facilitate access, how you decentralize banking systems, and how you facilitate that. So I think it has to be addressed in a broader context.
How do you respond, Dawoodi, that in a lot of African countries, the ordinary African citizen or subject, really, in terms of the way they are treated, is not really represented, that their interests are not represented, that yes, you do have members of parliament like you, Dawoodi Migereko, you probably do a better job than others, but that in fact, for the most part, you end up reflecting or representing the interests of people like you, the middle class, the elite.
No, but when you are a member of parliament and you belong to a government that must periodically seek renewal of term of office, you cannot run away from addressing the interests of the majority of the people.
Yeah, but it depends the majority, type of elections that you are talking about, because to be honest with you, out of 54 member countries of the African Union, the data I have seen, I cannot give you more than 15 countries where real or genuine elections are held. Most elections seem to be
Shaka,
fake.
Shaka, you and I come from Uganda, and we have been used to having free and fair elections held regularly. Every after 5 years, you have an election.
That is debatable. And, the only thing that I can agree with...
I can tell you one thing.
Yeah.
If I do not serve my people, if my government does not serve its people, I can tell you when we go to the polls, the people will pass their verdict over us.
The only thing I can agree is that you hold periodic elections. Whether they are free and fair is another issue.
But I can also assure you that we have always had free and fair elections in Uganda, and that is how I find myself here as a member of parliament and as a minister.
Just one comment, please, if you don't mind, Johan. We can't finish this program without talking about Zimbabwe. What do you think about Zimbabwe? What is happening now? It looks like things are happening in Zimbabwe. Considering the history of willing buyer, willing seller, and you know what President Robert Gabriel Mugabe did back in 2000.
I mean, there's frustration. There's frustration with a lot of countries like Zimbabwe, like even Southern Africa. We highlight Zimbabwe a lot.
Right.
But there are a lot of lessons we can learn from the other countries that have gone through a tough system of colonialization.
Namibia, South Africa itself.
Yes, Botswana, a lot of these countries. Yeah. And all of them are struggling because people fought for land, but the willing buyer, willing seller program may not necessarily work.
Like in your country.
Yeah. So in other words, I mean, my country in Kenya, I mean, some resources were provided for people to actually buy land.
Right.
By the British.
Right.
When they left.
Yeah.
I think the same was promised to Zimbabwe.
In fact, not only promised, in fact, they did until Tony Blair came into power.
Well, yeah. But they are turning the page. They are starting to look at the issue again. And they are starting to look to have a conversation around how do they now put their house in order in terms of policy reforms. And there's still time to do that. And it can be done.
This can be done. Yes. You have the last word? 20 well, seconds. 20 the, seconds,
the,
please.
The fact of the matter is that the problem of historical injustices in some of our countries, we, under our national land policy, for instance, we believe that once we create a land fund, which we have actually created, and capitalize it, then we can use some of the proceeds from this land fund to be in a position to buy out absentee landlords and pass on the land with registrable interest to the common people who traditionally have lived in these areas. And we believe this could be one of the ways in which to deal with the problem that you have raised.
I see. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Daudi Migereko, the Ugandan Minister of Lands, Housing and Urban Development, Dr. Johan Kyuka Kagwanja, Chief of the Land Policy Initiative at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa in Addis Ababa. Thanks to affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. Also, don't forget to tune into Voice of America's Africa 54, a 30-minute daily TV magazine program that features what's trending in news, health, sports, and lifestyle. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive.